Welcome to Below the Line, where we talk about working in Hollywood from the crew perspective. My name is Skid. I'm a former assistant director and your host. Today, we're talking about Ripley, the stylish 8-episode retelling of Patricia Highsmith's 1955 novel, The Talented Mr. Ripley. The series is currently streaming on Netflix, and my guest today is score composer Jeff Russo. Jeff, welcome to Below the Line.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Glad you're here. Co-hosting with me today again is composer and recording artist Louis Weeks. Louis, always nice to have you on the show.
Thanks, Kit. Hi, Jeff. Nice to meet you. Big fan.
Nice to meet you, too. Thanks.
Warning for listeners, today's conversation may contain spoilers. Jeff, to start out, I want to ask, at what stage did you get involved with this project? How did that come about?
I mean, right at the beginning, I've been working with Steve Zalian, who's the writer, showrunner, director, artists, everything. I'd worked with him before on The Night Of, and we were out to dinner, and he said, I'm adapting the Patricia Highsmith novel for a series, for a limited run series. And he was like, I'd really love for you to be involved. I was like, great. Like, let me read the script. Let me get into it. And so right at the very beginning, about 5 years ago.
When it was still in the conceptual phase then, so kind of as this was coming together, he was already talking to you about how score might play a role.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, typically I like to talk to a filmmaker really early on because music does play an important role in, you know, telling the narrative, like really sort of being the emotional heartbeat of a storytelling. And, you know, I think that the really good filmmakers are very tuned into that. Steve is an exceptional filmmaker, and he understands the way to use music and how important music is and how important it is to really sort of give us enough time to figure out what the score is. Like, we went through a lot of different iterations of what the style of the score would be and what the style of the show is. Like, that sort of went through a number of iterations in terms of, I think, what his concept was. So it's really great to be involved from the very beginning.
I'm always curious when collaborators work on more than one thing, how you and Steve Zalian felt like you were building off of a previous collaborative shared language, or if you felt like you were wiping the slate clean and starting fresh, you know, from square one.
Well, I mean, there is no starting fresh from square one when you talk about, like, you know, an unwritten sort of communication device. You know, we weren't making The Night Of Part Two, so it had nothing to do with it artistically. The way we are able to communicate with each other is something that we developed in that first project that we worked on. It was really, it developed from an early stage and then really got going, like, it really got going, you know, about halfway through. We really sort of really started to understand each other and how to speak to one another. I think, is a musician himself. He knows how to speak about music, and he's certainly not a micromanager in terms of, you know, how I went about writing, but he definitely knew what he liked and what he didn't like, and what was working, what wasn't working. So that sort of ability to communicate that certainly extended from the first project we worked on into the second. You know, that sort of goes for, you know, all the filmmakers that I've worked with over time.
Was there anything in those early conversations where Steve said to you, you know, pointed you in any stylistic direction from the beginning and said, this is the seed of what I think the score could be? And was there any first initial, you know, conversation that was about style?
We didn't really talk style early on. We were talking about the tone. There was definitely talk of the tone early on. And the script, the first script that I read, tone was a really prominent thing. I mean, one of the great parts of reading a script written by Steve Zalian, it's very descriptive, and tone is very apparent from the, you know, just from the words on the page as opposed to what you're going to see. He's a really you know, he's a really evocative filmmaker in that way, and a very evocative writer. So it was easy for me to sort of understand the tone. We didn't really talk about stylistic direction early on, but you know, one of his early notes was, if you ever run into an issue where you don't know what to do, you think about what Ennio Morricone might do in a 1963 thriller, or what Nino Rota might do. You know, and I don't think he was actually invoking those composers' names because of their Italian descent. I think he was really thinking about, like, how was music being used in films of that era? And it wasn't about how they sounded. It was more about their utilization. And we talked about the difference between, like, thriller music and sort of what is known as sort of typical 60s movie style music. And we sort of went back and forth between what we thought that might sound like and what we thought that might be. And you know, it is a combination of a number of things. It's a combination of you know, instrumentation, and also how those instruments are applied and in any given area. You know, there's a very clear pronouncement of that in a cue called Setting the Stage, which is from the last episode of the series, where Tom is in his villa in Venice setting up how he's going to sit Ravini in the living room, and he's doing all these things like closing the shades and moving lights around. And that particular piece of music is the perfect example of what we mean about sort of movie style music from the 60s versus a piece of music like A Venezia when he's going to Venice for the first time, which actually is a sort of a final version of that particular piece of music, which that theme arrives early on in the show. And we can discuss why that happened that way. But that was more of a thriller sort of sort of very dramatic piece of music that was not sort of in that style. So we sort of were blending these styles. What I'll talk about actually now is when we did start talking about music and tone and style and all that, I had started writing music for episode one, and Steve called me and said, you know, I think maybe you should jump to episode seven, write episode seven, and then we'll see how that can inform what we do in episode one. And once I did that, all of a sudden, the themes that I was writing in episode seven certainly were applicable in episode one. And I was then deconstructing thematic material from episode seven to put in episode one, which was a really interesting way to do things. I don't typically do things that way. And his suggestion to do that was actually really helpful to me in getting me to think about episode one in a different way. I wasn't thinking of it in terms of how am I beginning, how am I getting to the middle, and what is it going to be at the end. I was sort of looking at the whole thing and then moving to the end and applying those finished feelings and how a deconstructed model of that might work in, say, Leaving New York. which ended up being not what I originally thought, which was a deconstructed version of the final cue, but was a deconstructed version of the Ave Initia cue, which repeats itself in episodes 3 and then again in episode 5. It's just an interesting way to go about doing that.
Yeah, it strikes me that with that flexibility, that kind of approach ultimately stems from a real relationship of trust between the two of you, where I could imagine that kind of, you know, swapping in and out or kind of modularity in terms of where do we begin, where do we start, how do we approach things, that taking a nonlinear approach ultimately comes from a place of, okay, well, you and Steve are really in lockstep about how to approach the telling of the story.
You know, one of the things that I was just discussing, my sort of artistic relationship with Steve. And, you know, I don't know if you know much about my background. I was in a rock band for a very long time in the 90s and through the early 2000s and continue to actually play in the band. But how that applies to what I'm talking about now is Steve is the kind of person, he's like, oh, yeah, I want that guy in my band. And that's the best kind of sort of collaborative filmmaking experience. Like the filmmakers that I think I do the best work with are, and that's not to say that I don't cherish every filmmaker I work with, and I do, and I cherish all of the music that I write, but the most thrilling versions of those are the filmmakers that I feel that with. You know, I have that connection with Steve, I have that connection with Noah Hawley, probably more than anybody else, as we've now been working together for well over a decade, and have that same sort of back and forth where I'm like, hey, that's a guy I want in my band, you know, a person who can, you know what I'm doing, know how to manipulate that into something that is going to work for what he wants to do, and vice versa. And that's one of the great things about my collaborative effort here with Steve on this particular project, was that there was this back and forth, because at the very beginning, the very first theme I wrote, ended up being way too romantic in nature, because my initial idea was like, it's Italy, it's the 60s, I love this, it's going to be big and romantic and cinematic and all this stuff. And I went and I wrote that and I sent it to him, and he was like, this is a wonderful, beautiful piece of music, but I feel like this isn't the show that we're doing. The show that we're doing is this, he's a psychopath and it's a thriller, and we really want to lean into that. And it's strange, because that was like 3.5 years ago. And then 2 years after I wrote it, and he basically, I don't want to say shot it down, because it didn't get shot down, but it was one of those things where like, okay, you need to sort of move yourself in this other direction. And then 2.5 years later, that theme appears in all over the show, and not in necessarily the same vernacular that I originally wrote it in, but you hear it in a piano, you hear it in played on a clarinet, you hear this theme that I originally wrote. It was called Tom's Theme, and one of the things I also realized as I was writing music for the show is that typically, I write themes for different characters. I write themes for different geographical locations. I write themes for different experiences. And what really set this apart from most of the other projects that I work on is that every theme I was writing was Tom, because the entire show is Tom. So there didn't need to be a Marge theme. There didn't need to be a Dickie theme. There was all of, oh, okay, so Tom and Marge. And what's happening when they're together? Tom and Dickie, Tom and Ravini, Tom and Milez, as Ravini likes to call him. So my point about writing thematic material was everything I was writing was for Tom. And I didn't even really realize that until I was halfway done with the score. You know, I was like, oh, okay, this is this scene with Marge, and she's sitting on just in the square drinking a coffee, and there's someone taking her picture or something like that. I started writing for her, but what I realize is, even though it's just her on the screen, everything I'm doing has to relate somehow to Tom, because it's all a web that is spun by Tom. And as I started to come to terms with that, all of the music started to sort of lock in. All of the music started to really lockstep in. And interestingly enough, it was like one of the most difficult pieces to sort of figure out was the very final piece of music. And that was because, I consider myself to be a relatively well-adjusted human being. I wanted to see Tom fail. And, I don't want the narcissist psychopath to win the day, but at the end of the show, he wins, right? It's a triumph. So I had to write music that had an air of triumphantness, is that a word? But I still was pulled by my own ethos to try to make it still have tension in it. And that was a very difficult piece of music to write. I sort of wrote that a few times before I even found myself saying, okay, now I can send it to Steve and see what he thinks. I really had to come to terms with how to live inside of the character of Tom and stay there.
The performances on screen are so well rendered. They're nuanced, and there's so much detail to all the performances on screen. And it sounds like you were writing in pre-production, or kind of before you saw picture. And then how much did seeing the detail of the filmmaking change your approach, or did it at all?
Well, I don't know that it changed my approach. Like, with every new thing I read, saw, felt with the show, it was like the bar was getting risen and risen and risen. And then as I was seeing edits come together, I was like, wow, okay, everybody is operating on such a high level that, I really need to up my own game. Like I can't just be like, oh yeah, this will work. It was really particular. Like, we really needed to investigate and examine every note that was put on screen. And we did that. And I did that. And I think even when I was done, Steve then went and did that. I knew it was going to look the way it was going to look, but you never really understand it until you see it. Now, yes, I was writing some music prior to seeing picture. And then I was also writing after seeing picture. I wrote a bunch and then I stopped and then I waited to get picture so I could restart. And what happened was, he didn't start sending me scenes. He sent me eight episodes. He sent me all eight episodes in varying forms of being open on the operating table. They were all cut. They all told their story and they all changed as we were going. But I did get an opportunity 2 years ago, almost, to watch all eight episodes. Now, it did change significantly from then to what you see now, but not so significantly that it's a different story. So I did understand, like, the basic form of the show. And I really did understand the level of detail that was put into the way every shot was put into the show.
I imagine that the question of, like, well, when does a composer do what they do is pretty at the top of mind of a lot of people who aren't familiar with it. And it sounds like your process in this was, you were always working on it from very beginning to, and that just kind of built on each thing you had done before.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. That's an interesting question. When does a composer do what he does or she? And I think the answer to that question is there is no answer to that question. It's 24 hours a day. So as soon as I know I'm doing something, it's beginning already. And because a lot of it is like living with something. I spent a lot of time thinking about this show. And I do the same with Fargo, for instance, where I do a lot of living inside my psyche with a character to really try to figure out how what that means from a musical standpoint, because most of that is not typically accessible. Like I can talk about what it is. Like I'm gonna do something in A minor that has 16th notes with triplets, and I don't write like that. I write by sublimation, and in that I take the character and the story in, and then I sort of sit around and tinker and wonder. It's a lot about wondering. So having an amount of time to work on something really gives me an opportunity to live with something, and thus feels more like I'm putting in more than I would if you said, "Do you have 2 weeks to write an episode?" Which is typical in some other projects. And then your first idea is your only idea, right? And in this case, my first idea was sometimes the right idea. My seventh idea was sometimes the right idea. And I really had an opportunity to sort of really explore that. And that is not typical in most episodic television. It's very rare. So I'm extremely fortunate that I got to do that, and I get to do something like Fargo, which also affords me that same opportunity. And those things are really rare for a composer. I think we all, as composers, complain about not having enough time to do it. It's like, you know, it's a mess because, on the one hand, if I don't have a deadline, I'll never get done. And if I have too short of a deadline, I won't have enough time. So finding that middle ground is sort of very difficult.
Jeff, when you talked about how detailed the approach was and looking at what was filmed, it reminded me of a couple of moments over the course of it. And I'm not even sure I caught them all, but for example, the slight use of color in the cat's footprints or a little bit of blue underwater, just very, very small, deliberate details. And I'm curious if there's an equivalent on the score side where you just could add a little bit of something in a certain place or just having that much attention to detail and how that carried over to what we're hearing.
Well, I would say the answer is yes, not in the same visually perceptible way as something like what you're talking about, because for me, doing a harp flourish or a flute flourish is not this, it's not noticeable in the same way. It's just sort of inside the fabric of a piece of music that sounds like music from, you know, one end of the piece to the other. Whereas when all of a sudden you're watching this black and white piece and then you see a hint of color, you're like, oh, what's that? It's not in the same way. But it is in a feeling, and you might not be able to directly notice it. But like I said about that original Tom theme, which has a much more sort of romantic emotional concept to it, when that appears, it does take you into a bit of a more lower, sort of like lull you into a bit of a romance of it. And there is a little bit of that. And the reason why I wanted to keep pushing on that was because that, I think, is one of the things that keeps Tom wanting to be there. Like, he's enamored with the romance of this life. He meets with Dickie's dad, and all of a sudden he's like, wait, you mean go to Italy? And then he's like, well, yeah. So he goes to Italy and he sees, like, in the second episode, he says to Dickie, he's like, I'm obviously not going to try to get you to leave here, because I look around and I'm like, why would anybody leave here? That feeling, I think, is the thing that keeps him, I mean, aside from him being a complete psychopath, But that's the thing that triggers his psychopathy and, you know, oh, I got to live like this. And if I feel like they're going to push me out, well, I'm going to kill this guy and then I'm going to take over his life because I want to live his life. That part of it is that little bit of romance. So I do push that in and out of the score occasionally. And I'm not sure if that's like so noticeable as noticeable as something like, oh, when the camera goes underwater and you see a hint of the blue in the water, or when you see the hint of the blood in the paw print, I don't think it's as noticeable as something like that.
Well, I think it's, your example is a really beautiful one, because I think that the challenge of a story like this one is the kind of ambivalence about what to do with a main character who is a sociopath, right? Like, what do we do with this impulse that we as viewers have of wanting to identify with our main character, even if they are deranged? What I noticed in your music was just what you pointed out, a kind of really complex relationship to that pull of wanting to identify, or like, you know, be closer to this person, or understand his motivations. But also there is a real distance, I think, at moments, like narratively with the music, where again it feels very, I do think it's noticeable, in the same way that the color might be. And I think it also really helps to deepen our read on the character, and also our relationship to like watching, which is like Tom is such a watcher. And I think that like it's a very meta. I found myself thinking a lot about the meta relationship of like the audience and Tom, and the music, I think, is a really connective tissue. To me, listening to the score, I definitely feel those color flashes, and I feel that those flourishes in a way that really deepens the weird relationship we have with Tom.
And I think that that's, you know, I'm as much as I'm a creator, I'm also a viewer, right? So I'm also having a relationship with the main character. And I feel like I always try to let that come out in what I'm writing. You know, I'm a firm believer in never writing music to score what is happening on screen, but more to score what characters are feeling. You know, definitely what they're feeling over what they're doing. And especially with a character as deeply flawed and as deeply, you know, entrenched in this psychotic desire to live this life, that I wanted to try to fish out what he's feeling. And that's the thing that always connects audiences, I think, to characters. You know, it's like their feelings and emotions, and they're identifying with them. So, you know, it's a slippery slope when you're talking about somebody as psychotic as Tom, you know. So you do feel the connection, but then you definitely also want to feel the separation. And you definitely don't want it to be too emotional, because that wouldn't feel genuine. That's not a genuine, to me, that wouldn't feel genuine. That would feel leading. And, you know, so I was just trying to find that right balance between those two things.
Jeff, I wanted to ask you a little about how these episodes are structured and what it means for your work. There's no title sequences. And so, where a show might sometimes sort of set an early tone through a title sequence, there's not that opportunity. But it also seems to me that the closing credits, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed to be incorporating sounds from the episode before. Like each one is different in a way. And so, talk to me about the thought behind that on both ends of the show, and what kind of challenge that was for you.
Well, there was an idea of doing a title sequence, and I think that we abandoned the idea. I say we, it's not me. Like if they had said write a title sequence, I would have done it. But there was in the beginning, a couple of years ago, talk about like wanting to do a title sequence. And I think in the end, the idea was, why bother doing one in a situation where, especially with Netflix, they allow you to do it for the first episode, and then all subsequent episodes don't have it anyway. You know, they either make it 10 seconds or whatever it is. And that's, that's no, I'm not making a judgment on, what they do or how they plan their shows that they put on. But because of that, I think we decided to not do that and to find the tone in the score. The end piece of music, was, decided upon. We use a version. Actually, episode one has a slightly different end title music, but the rest of the end title music is all based in and around the Ave Initia theme, which was really Tom's sort of, lack of a better way to put it, like his evil theme, like the moving forward into the depths of doom, and. Then it was Steve's idea to sort of have, the sounds of the show in it. And, that ranges from an echo of a piece of music that you may have heard that was like a song or whatever from the show, and then echoes of dialogue and echoes of lots of different things. And that truly just became an evocative piece at the end. Again, it's Netflix, so you don't really get to watch it unless you want to, right? You have to want to watch the end credits, which is what it is, and I'm watching it now with my family and I'm watching the end credits.
Well, I found that having watched the show made me want to sit with the show for a few minutes before I went on to the next episode, and hearing the sound sort of reinforced that, letting it settle, if you will, at least personally, that really worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just really want to say I really enjoyed the music. And I think that you did a fantastic job. And
thank you.
I'm really impressed. Is there anything else about the score that you want to talk about? Or
I don't know. Like, one of the things that I really cared about with this particular score was the sound of it and how we went about recording it and what we did. Because it was really important to me for it to feel and sound grounded. And what I mean by grounded is not in an emotional way, but in a tactile way. It's recorded with a small ensemble. It's like 20 strings and 8 winds and a harp and, some other stuff. I played guitar on it for all of the sort of more Italian music that I had to do. That was one thing that Steve had said. He's like, we really need some like score that will help us put us in place, right? So some Sicilian music, write some Sicilian themes. So I did, and I, they're on the soundtrack, Sicilian 1, Sicilian 2, Sicilian 3. And that was me playing guitar, and then we did some accordion, and it's more typical of what you would hear like in an Italian thing. But what I wanted to make sure was the level of detail that went into shooting it. I wanted to put that level of detail into the creation of the score. And we were very particular with how we were making it. We weren't making it like you would typically make an episodic television show. Which is really quick, like, okay, put the mic up and let's go. Like, we were really, really specific about how I wanted it to sound, how my engineers were going to work on it, how the editors were going to edit it. And that was really something that was important to me. Because I wanted to be able to say that I rose to that same level. I wanted to take the level at which they were working on production, I wanted my production to be that high level. That was really important to me. And I think we achieved that. Like, as you listen to the score, I think it doesn't sound like a typical score in that way. It sounds like the way people used to make scores. And I didn't want it to sound retro. That was not what we were trying to do, because this is a modern thriller. But using the same techniques that they used in the 60s really does lend itself to a more genuine human sound. And that's that I wanted to really accentuate the failures and successes of being human, and that you really hear in the score. You hear all of the little things that are wrong and all of the little things that are right.
You know, I noticed the production of the score, and psychologically, at least to me, the effect it had on me was it really did keep me very on the edge of my seat in terms of, you know, that chamber sound, the miking, and you know, having it just feel more in my face, you know, a little bit closer, a little bit more tactile, like you said. And I think that to me that was such a smart move, because it doesn't offer you any relief. That a big room, a big roomy, you know, orchestral sound that other people might use on other pieces, I think it has a psychological effect of giving you a little bit of breathing room, where
Sure.
you can sit back and be like, oh, well, that's happening up on stage. I don't really need to worry about that. But like, if it's in your face, it's like, this involves me, and like, this is like kind of my problem now. And the effect that that has on the storytelling, I think, is pretty profound.
I think that the idea there, to be specific about what I was thinking of, is I want somebody to lean in, you know, and that's if you have to lean in. To me, that is the thing that will draw you in. Like I think you're right about like, and by the way, doing that big orchestral sound in a beautiful big scoring stage is very effective for certain things. And like it makes person feel good about it. And this was not meant to make you feel good about what you're seeing. This was meant to draw you into what you were seeing. And I think that was my initial intention. But I'm glad that you caught on to that. That's really great.
It makes sense that your instinct was when you saw what everyone else was doing. Like, the whole everything about the production is elevated,
Right.
in terms of kind of like taking any sense of what a template might be and kind of breaking it and kind of applying a very intentional, bespoke approach. And to me, like, the production value of the score is very akin to the way it's photographed and the way the performances are, and the costumes, and like, in that sense, it's of a whole of the rest of the piece.
Appreciate it.
On that note, we're going to call it a wrap. Jeff, it was really great having you here.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a really great conversation.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Listeners, I always appreciate your feedback. You'll find my contact info at our website, belowthelineoneword.biz. That's BIZ. You'll also find past episodes and links to all of our social media, so check it out. So, Jeff, where next will we hear your work?
Well, I work on a show called Bosch Legacy, so that's, you know, that's going to be out soon. Next, I'm currently working on Alien, which is a 8-episode miniseries for FX based on the movies. And I am about to start working on a film called Section 31, which is a Star Trek film that we're doing. That's the stuff that's coming up right now.
Well, Jeff, all of those shows are in my queue. I hope to come back and talk about it.
Well, all right, man.
Thanks so much. Closing credits, thanks to Curtis Five for our music, John Wan for our logo, and to all of our listeners, I appreciate you. The logo is available on t-shirts, mugs, and stickers at redbubble.com. Please rate us wherever you get your podcasts and tell your friends. Thanks again from Below the Line.